I also come to order. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Flickery.
Here.
Bonner.
Here.
Botten.
Here.
Brechtel.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Burkhart.
Here.
Berg.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Childers excused. Connolly.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Davison.
Here.
Edmonds.
Here.
Eklund.
Here.
Esquivel.
Here.
Freeman.
Here.
Gay. Gingery,
here.
Goggles,
here.
Greer,
here.
Green,
here.
Harshman, Harshman,
here.
Harshman,
here.
Harvey,
here.
Hunt,
here.
Illaway,
here.
Yagi, Kasparic, Croker,
here.
Crone,
here.
Lockhart, Lockhart, Laux,
here.
Lubno,
here.
Madden, McKim,
here.
McComey,
here.
Miller,
here.
Moniz,
here.
Nicholas,
here.
Patton,
here.
Peasley,
here.
Pedersen,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Petroff,
here.
Korberg,
here.
Roscoe,
here.
Simlick,
here.
Shepperson,
here.
Stewart,
here.
Stubson,
here.
Teeters,
here.
Throne, Throne, Vronish,
here.
Wallace,
here.
Zwanitz or Dan?
Here.
Swanitzer Dave,
here.
Mr. Speaker,
here.
Lockhart,
excuse.
Lockhart excused, Throne,
here.
59 present, 1 excused.
Please stand for the morning prayer with Reverend Patrick Bradley.
As someone finishes the Pledge of Allegiance with play ball, I thought I would start off with a quote from a baseball great. Satchel Paige said, "Don't pray when it rains if you don't pray when the sun shines. The sun's shining, so let us pray." Lord God, we appreciate your wisdom in giving us cold weather so that we can appreciate the warm. We are a predominantly rural state, and we appreciate the seasons. As the good book tells us, there's a time for everything, a time for calving, a time for slaughter, a time for building up, and a time for ripping down. Help this body today to pass the laws that will build up our state and not rip it apart. Keep the discussion civil and the tempers cool. When committees meet, may the voices of the citizenry be heard. May the welfare of all citizens be considered, and may the education and social welfare of all the citizens be foremost in the deliberations here today. Lord, many of the laws enacted here deal with procedures or administrative issues. Let those issues be handled expeditiously and with gentle consideration for the people who will be affected. On this day, as the sun shines, let us remember the words of Paul in 1 Thessalonians, where we are exhorted, "Rejoice always and pray unceasingly." May the Almighty and ever-loving God bless you, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.
And to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
No decisions. Meeting again tonight.
You ready, Bill? We're at that order of business, Journal Committee Report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 2nd, 2011 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Freeman, Representative Kasparik.
Messages from the Senate.
Message 194, Mr. Speaker, the Senate adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the bills as below. By the vote indicated, Senate File 104, meningitis vaccination, ayes 8, noes 22. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Signed, Dinah Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, the Senate adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the bills as below. By the vote indicated, Senate File 114, teacher evaluations, ayes 6, noes 23. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Signed, Dinah Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Representative Croker.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
I just found out that our wonderful page, Erica, who does such a great day, has a birthday today, so I think we need to sing her happy birthday.
Day two. Happy birthday to you, happy birthday dear Erica, happy birthday to you.
And the doctor of the day is Dr. Tom Radosevich from Casper, so might welcome him. He must be tending to someone.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Up in the South Gallery here is a good friend of mine, is Van Johnson. He's extremely active and a very good civic citizen in our community, and he was on the board when they built a new prison in Rawlins.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, may I have the privilege of the floor?
Please proceed.
In the back of the room is a good friend of mine who used to be also my principal, and I had the distinct honor of teaching his daughter that still has a special place in my heart, the assistant superintendent of Green River Schools, Jamie Christensen.
Very good. We're at that order of business, Senate files on first reading. The first Senate file for our consideration is House Bill 79, Senate File 79.
Senate File 79, introduced by Senator Case.
First reading the bill.
An act relating to Recreation Safety Act.
Senate File 79 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 89.
Senate File 89, introduced by Senator Ross.
First reading the bill.
An act relating to Adult Protective Services.
Senate File 89 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 94.
Senate File 94, introduced by Senator Johnson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to immunity liability for emergency equipment donations.
Senate File 94 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 128.
Senate File 128, introduced by Senator Hines.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to abandoned vehicles, storage expenses.
Senate File 128 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate Joint Resolution 2.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 2, introduced by Senator Nutting.
First reading the bill.
The Joint Resolution dealing with health care freedom.
Senate Joint Resolution 2 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate Joint Resolution 5.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 5, introduced by Senator Meyer.
First reading the bill.
A Joint Resolution in defense of marriage constitutional amendment.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 5 is assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next Senate file for consideration is Senate File 109.
Senate File 109, introduced by Senator Meyer.
First reading the bill.
An act relating to peace officers in the state parks.
Senate File 109 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 124.
Senate File 124, introduced by Senator Escobel.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to overweight and oversized vehicle penalties.
Senate File 124 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 73.
Senate File 73, introduced by the Mineral Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to environmental quality regarding municipal solid waste landfills.
Senate File 73 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 120.
Senate File 120, introduced by Senator Bebout.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to government reorganization, workforce services, and employment.
Senate File 120 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 25.
Senate File 25, introduced by Senator Martin.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the Wyoming Long-Term Care Choices Act.
Senate File 25 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 50.
Senate File 50, introduced by the Labor Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to Medicaid Options Study.
Senate File 50 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 102.
Senate File 102, introduced by the Labor Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to Medicaid Cost Study.
And Senate File 102 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. We are at that order of business re-referral. Well, let's back up one step here. Reports from standing committees, and then we'll do re-referrals.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 198, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Peasley, Throne, No, Barbuto, Nicholas, signed Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 2, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, signed Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 57, engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, signed Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 110, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, signed Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number four, Education, to whom is referred House Bill 264, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Freeman, Crone, Laux, Teeters, No, Connolly, Croker, Madden, signed Representative Teeters, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number eight, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom is referred House Bill 235, respectfully reports back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Kennedy, McKim, Zwanitzer, Dave, No, Botten, Korberg, Vronish, signed Representative Korberg, Chairman.
Have any re-referrals? Chairman Korberg.
Mr. Speaker, just... just give me one second, Mr. Speaker. Yes, Mr. Speaker, I would like to refer House Bill 235 to your committee number two, Appropriations.
It's been moved for a re-referral of House Bill 235 to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. We're at that order of business. Bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 93.
House Bill 93, introduced by the Tribal Relations, an act relating to the creation of unified school districts.
House Bill 93 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 156.
House Bill 156, introduced by Representative Petroff. Act relating to state lands regarding Grand Teton National Park transfer of state lands.
House Bill 156 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 179.
House Bill 179, introduced by Representative Petroff, an act relating to local improvements, energy improvement program.
House Bill 179 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 189.
House Bill 189, introduced by Representative Stubson, an act relating to real property foreclosure and redemption revisions.
House Bill 189 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 214.
House Bill 214, introduced by Representative Buchanan, an act relating to education, Hathaway Scholarship, college attendance.
House Bill 214, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 242.
House Bill 242, introduced by Representative Illaway, an act relating to insurance surplus lines.
House Bill 242, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 255.
House Bill 255, introduced by Representative Patton, an act relating to veterans tax exemption.
House Bill 255, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. We're at that order of business. Bills on third reading and final passage consent list. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 36 is off the consent list. I move the consent list consisting of the following bills: House Bill 92, House Bill 99, House Bill 103, House Bill 129, House Bill 139, House Bill 153, House Bill 155, House Bill 162, House Bill 176, House Bill 178, and House Joint Resolution 3.
Would anybody like to remove one of the bills from the consent list? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 162.
House Bill 162 will be removed from the consent list and placed on the regular list. Any other removals? The reading clerk will read the bills.
House Bill 92, introduced by Representative Lubnow, an act relating to crimes and offenses, impersonation through electronic means, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 99, introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to treatment of substance abuse, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 103, introduced by Representative McKim, an act relating to the Western Regional Higher Education Compact, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 129, introduced by Representative Harshman, an act relating to nuclear energy, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 139, introduced by Representative Bonner, an act relating to Wyoming Veterans Memorial Highway, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 153, introduced by Representative Semlech, an act relating to fuel tax regarding agricultural tax, gas tax refund program, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 155, introduced by Representative Lubnow, an act relating to student assessment, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 176, introduced by Representative Miller, an act relating to sales and use taxes regarding nuclear energy as carbon-free renewable energy, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 178, introduced by Representative Kraft, an act relating to cemeteries and burials, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Joint Resolution Number 3, introduced by Representative Childers, a joint resolution dealing with the United States Supreme Court demanding that Congress cease and desist from enacting mandates beyond the enumerated powers granted to Congress, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the House? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blickrey.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers. Childers excused. Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund. Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Gingrey,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart excused. Laux.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Petrov.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlick.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Steward.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Vronish.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 2 excused. As to House Bill 92, are there any changes? Brechtel? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? Peasley? Aye to no. Are there any? Gay? Aye to no. Are there any? Hunt? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 54 ayes, 4 no, 2 excused. As to House Bill 99, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 aye, 2 excused. As to House Bill 103, are there any changes? Are there any changes? Representative Childers, House Bill 103 on the consent list?
Aye.
Childers, excused to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 59 ayes, 1 excused. As to House Bill 129, are there any changes? Childers?
Aye.
Excused to aye. Are there any? Blake? Aye to no. Connolly? Aye to no. Gingery? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 56 aye, 3 no, 1 excused. As to House Bill 139, are there any changes? Childers, excused to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 excused. As to House Bill 153, are there any changes? Childers, excused to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 excused. As to House Bill 155, are there any changes? Childers, excused to aye. Byrd, aye to no. Harvey, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, 2 no, 1 excused. As to House Bill 176, are there any changes? Childers, excused to aye. Steward, aye to no. Byrd, aye to no. Stubson, aye to no. Zwanitzer Dan, aye to no. Connolly, aye to no. Roscoe, aye to no. Greer, aye to no. Botten, aye to no. Freeman, aye to no. Barbudo, aye to no. Blake, aye to no. Madden, aye to no. Esquivel, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 46 aye, 13 no, 1 excused. As to House Bill 178, are there any changes? Childers, excused to aye. Eklund, aye to no. Korberg, aye to no. Peasley, aye to no. Brechtel, aye to no. Miller, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Gay, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 53 aye, 6 no, 1 excused. As to House Joint Resolution 3, are there any changes? Childers, aye. Byrd, aye to no. Connolly, aye to no. Esquivel, aye to no. Goggles, aye to no. Blake, aye, to no. Barbudo, aye, to no. Roscoe, aye, to no. Throne, aye, to no. Kraft, aye, to no. Freeman, aye, to no. Goggles, aye, to no. Barbudo, aye, to no. Are there any other changes? Connolly, I have you down as a no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 49 ayes, 10 noes, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bills 92, 99, 103, 129, 139, 153, 155, 176, 178, and House Joint Resolution 3 have passed the House. We're at that order of business. Bills on third reading and final passage, regular list. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 36.
House Bill 36, introduced by Representative Escobel, an act relating to the Wyoming Cancer Control Act, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number one to House Bill 36 and will explain the logic behind it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a health department program that was started 5 years ago right here. And at the time, it was a new thing. There wasn't other states doing it, and we didn't know how much it was going to cost. And by the time it was introduced first, the appropriation was $8 million, and then they changed it down to $2.4 million, and, you know, nobody had any idea how much money would be used. Well, this is what has happened in the ensuing 5 years is that, you know, they looked through their cost estimates and found out that each one of these colonoscopies in the pro forma before the bill was passed 4 years ago, that were going to cost $3,000 a piece. And when it finally came to pass, the health department, through their good negotiations, the price went down to $1,800. And I recall, as it went back and forth, the appropriations was a big issue, but we had a lot of money then, and I and the majority of other people in this body voted for it, kind of with the tacit understanding that if we had this number way off, that it would be set to an appropriate level in following years. Well, what has happened is that a $2.4 million appropriation, biennium appropriation, has grown as things have grown in the standard part of the budget. And what's happened is that they are not spending as much money. Part of the reason is because the cost is only $1,800 a copy, and the expected cost was $3,000. And they also found that the demand for it wasn't as high as it was. Now, there's two things departments can do when that happens. They can revert the money back to the general fund, or they could revert it back to another program that's maybe short of money in that department. You know, and we've heard all kinds of comments about how out of control spending is in that department, and that nobody seems to have a handle on it. And this is just one good example. You know, to me, good management would have turned back some of this money, but this bill, what it does in the original bill is it says, well, If you look to be high risk, we can authorize another one of these and another one if you're still high risk. And I'm not arguing with that. If that's good policy, it's good policy. But what I'm saying is that there's got to be some division and some gradual assumption of individual responsibility among our citizens. And what I'm suggesting in this amendment by adding paragraph E is that we're not going to pay for the whole thing the second time, because we've discovered in the first time at our cost that you are at risk.
But the next time, you know you're at risk, and we think that you ought to, you know, get some skin in the game too. Now, I know under the assumption that the sponsor is going to assume this is not a friendly amendment, we'll tell you, we'll tell you it's only for the poor, but it really isn't. It's 250% of the poverty line, you know, and all I'm saying is if it really costs $1,800 or $1,700, we'll present a voucher for half of that if they want to go in and get another one. They know they're high risk at this point. It isn't so much a stab in the dark anymore. And, you know, we can make a stand here and say that the appropriate way to budget these overfunded programs is to turn the money back. And if you're not going to turn it back, don't come up with a new way to spend it within the same program, which is all this is. So that's the amendment, and I'll be glad to answer any questions. Thank you.
Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and yes, I do think it is a very unfriendly amendment. But yeah, this is a needs-based program, but really you can't punish a program for being fiscally prudent, you know, and going out there and making deals with providers that are already cutting these costs by over 50%. And now, like I said, it's a needs-based program, and I wish it was a type of disease where you could monitor and, you know, like high blood pressure or high cholesterol, and you just take a pill every morning. But, you know, cancer is something that, you know, beyond your own means, you really can't control. You know, it just happens to people that would get lung cancer that never smoked, you know. But there are things that I think these people are doing that are responsible. You know, if they've had a bad colonoscopy, obviously they're trying to do things to stay alive, and you know, maybe they're a smoker, they probably quit smoking. I'm sure they probably are getting back into a good diet and exercise and those types of things. But, you know, if this amendment passes, I know two things that are going to go up, Medicaid costs and funerals. You know, we've heard so many times on this floor, this is how other states do it. Wyoming did so good in this program that they actually won the national award and were presented that award by the 41st President and First Lady. That was 2 years ago. And you look at the bill, it says control, cancer control. And obviously that's what we're trying to do. If we're not keeping it under control, then it's going to get out of control. And instead of taking people that are needs-based into a program that is very preventable, then you're starting to look at things like radiation, chemotherapy, very costly treatments. So, you know, we've already identified this high-risk group. So we know who they are. It's based on evidence. It's based on guidelines. So I think it's a very prudent and it's not an expense, you know, because they did good managing their money, and they can expand it to rescreen people that they've identified as high risk. You know, that's only going to come back and benefit the citizens of the state of Wyoming tenfold. When I presented the bill, I told you that the one person I found that did survive it, went through treatment, they spent over $250,000 just to survive. Now, some of these people, you know, they're just not going to take that initiative to go in there again if it comes down to them coming up with $900 to do this, and it means that they're not going to pay their light bill, their rent, their food bill. You know, that's probably the hard decisions that they're going to have to make. But I don't think we should penalize this program for being fiscally prudent and being successful. And we could be more successful. And that's why I ran the bill. And I urge you a no vote on the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask you to just remember that these folks are below the poverty level. And if they can't afford to go back, they won't go back. But if it's recommended that they do go back, there's a reason, and that is because they need to go back. And so I just reiterate what my colleague from Cheyenne said, and we need to pay attention to this, and the program's working. I don't think we need to penalize this program. And if you refer to page 2, it says on there that in the event that analysis shows spending in the program will exceed the budget available, the department shall institute a waiting list. So they're not talking about abusing the program or using more funding. I just implore you to remember that these people are below the poverty level. Thank you.
Representative Harvey, Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just really hate saying this, but institutional memory, it makes me feel old. I was here during this passage of this bill and all of the discussion. It was an interim topic. And the topic that we'd been assigned was how to control Medicaid spending, how to control costs. And this was one of the programs that came out of the studies that we did that interim. Now, the reason being is that it is the most easily detected, and it's just through the screening process. It is the most easily detected, and once it's detected, it's one of the most easily treated in the early stages. But if it's late stages, it's devastating. Part of the testimony, well, before I go there, first I have to tell you that this is not people who are at 100% of poverty level and lower. This is people who are 200% of poverty, 250% of poverty level or lower. And so it's folks that are just almost making all of their commitments, and one devastating financial reality can upset the cart for quite some time. Now I'd like to tell you about the most compelling testimony that we heard in the Labor Committee during the interim when this bill was conceived. It was from a cancer doctor. And she testified to us that once people are diagnosed with cancer, she will not accept them as patients unless they quit their job and apply for Social Security disability. She said, because we know that the cancer treatments will bankrupt you and we won't get our money. But we also know that if you go on Social Security disability, that you will be Medicaid eligible and then your costs will be paid. That was a jaw dropper for me. You won't treat unless you go on Medicaid? And so it seems to me that for $900 a pop, that it is just such a cheap fix. If they have been proven to be at risk, then let's screen them the second time, because those polyps are easy to remove during the screening test, and it removes, it cuts down on the opportunity, if that's a bad word, it cuts on their risk factor of getting cancer, colon cancer. And so that's really what this bill is about, is if they've been proven to have a risk, we want them to go back a year later and have that test again, because we can pay the $1,800 for the whole test now, for the second test, we can keep them at a very low risk, or we can pay all of the money in the end, because it's a very large amount, enough that people lose their homes, they lose their livelihoods, they go on Social Security disability, and then they're on Medicaid for the rest of their life. Did I say I was against this amendment?
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman Teeters?
Thank you. I just would like to clarify for the body that I believe this is an expansion of this program. Everybody's saying this is not going to cost more. Well, if it's not going to cost more, then we over-appropriated the amount of money that we initially put in the program. And they're going to come back, and when we reauthorize this program, there'll have to be more money involved. So this is definitely an expansion of the program, and it is going to cost more. There'll be less reversion than there would have been. I mean, you can look at it any way you want to look at it, but it is an expansion. And I'm on and against the bill.
Anyone else for their first time prior to sponsor? Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just wanted to remind the body that this particular program is funded out of tobacco trust settlement funds. And that doesn't mean they're not real dollars. They are. But this is a cancer prevention program, and I think it's an appropriate use of tobacco trust settlement funds. One of the reasons this program has saved money, has been prudent in its expenditures, it is run efficiently. This particular program is administered by two people, a nurse and a clerical assistant in this entire state who go out and negotiate these discounts and these contracts with providers, and then they help those who are needy and who need the program to navigate the system. They have been absolutely efficient, and that's part of the reason there is money remaining in the program. I urge you to defeat the amendment. Thank you.
Anyone for their second time prior to the sponsor? Second time? Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't want to belabor this. You know, as you just heard, most of the testimony and the debate that rebuts what I've got here in this amendment suggests that the amendment says that the program isn't any good. And that obviously is not what I was getting at with this amendment. What I'm saying is that we have a department that's out of control, and this is an example of why it's out of control, that when it works as it's supposed to and it gets awards, the idea isn't necessarily to automatically grow the program, but to revert the money back and say, look, we didn't know what this was going to cost when it started out. We had no idea. And it's working better and more efficiently and cheaper than we thought. But no, the idea here is just to expand the program. And I'm not even against expanding the program. I'm just saying, why can't we expect somebody that has had the benefit of a first colonoscopy and discovered they're at risk, at a certain risk, why is it too much to ask for them to have some skin in the game? The first time is a little different thing. That's a shot in the dark, so to speak. But once you know you've got a susceptibility, I mean, what you got here is a obvious case of where, you know, we can either say, well, we think this is the way these programs should run in the health department and we're just going to let things blow up out of control, or we can say, look, we're going to start managing this as appropriate. And that's really the end of it. It's a thing that I think we have to consider, and I hope that you thought about it a little more. But it's not saying anything about the program being bad. I voted for the program 4 years ago, and I'm glad I voted for it 5 years ago. So that's not the issue. It's just the whether or not we are willing to accept or demand individual responsibility at some point in the process. Thank you.
All those in favor of third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 36, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 36 has failed. House Bill 36 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blickrey.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Davison, aye.
Edmonds,
no.
Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
no.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparic,
aye.
Croker,
no.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart excused, Laux,
aye.
I'm sorry. Lockhart, excused to aye. Laux. Lubno. Madden. McKim. McComey. Miller. Moniz. Nicholas. Patton. Peasley. Pedersen. Peterson. Petroff. Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlick.
No.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
No.
Throne.
Aye.
Braunisch.
Aye.
Wallace.
No.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Miller. Aye to no. Shepperson. Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 46 aye, 14 no.
House Bill 36, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 36 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 147.
House Bill 147, introduced by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, an act relating to taxation and revenue regarding excise tax vendor compensation, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 147, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger. Berger. Blake. Blake.
Aye.
Blickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green. Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Lubnow,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
no.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Patterson,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Semlick,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
no.
Throne,
aye.
Ronish,
no.
Wallace,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
Berger,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Brechtel, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 54 aye, 6 no.
House Bill 147, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 147 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 188. We're going to go to 162 prior.
House Bill 162, introduced by Representative Burkhart, an act relating to the Office of Occupational Health and Safety, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 162, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
No.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Campbell,
aye. Kennedy,
aye.
Childers,
no.
Connolly,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Davison,
aye.
Edmonds,
aye.
Eklund,
no.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
no.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
no.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
no.
Hunt,
no.
Illaway,
no.
Yagi,
no.
Kasparik,
aye.
Croker,
no.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
no.
Lubnow,
aye.
Madden,
no.
McKim,
no.
McComey,
aye.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
no.
Patton,
no.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Petroff,
aye.
Korberg, Roscoe,
aye.
Simlick,
no.
Shepperson, Stewart,
no.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Braunisch,
no.
Wallace,
no.
Swanitzer Dan,
no.
Swanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Davison, aye to no.
Oh, now it's down.
Blake, no to aye. Connolly, aye to no.
Still down.
Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 29 ayes, 31 noes.
House Bill 162, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 162 has failed to pass the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 188.
House Bill 188, introduced by Representative Childers, an act relating to gambling definitions, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to move Third Green Amendment number one to House Bill 188. The reason I'm doing this is, in the interim, we talked about this. We're talking about a bona fide social relationship having to do with gambling. The friendly poker games, and the reason this came up is each county and each sheriff, each district attorney and counties were interpreting a bona fide social relationship differently. And the intent of this bill was that folks could gather in a place and just have a card game. There'd be no advertising, no money made, and if you just wanted to sit, play cards, that was fine. But because of the, the different counties and sheriffs interpreting it differently, we studied it in the interim, and we tried to define what a bona fide social relationship was. Guess what? We did a poor job. So what we came up with was saying, if you look at the bottom of the first page, a bona fide social relationship means a relationship based on any common interest. And so we could have anybody from anywhere interested in any game coming and just having the game. And I just think it opens up. On the way up here today, I had a law enforcement guy, and he said, boy, do you realize what you're doing? You're opening this state up with that definition. I said, well, we're trying to define what it is. And he said, well, you sure didn't do a very good job of it. So I'm wondering if we would be better to resist this bill and still try to find out, and I think the chairman of TRW from the other side said he was going to try to come up with a good definition of what a bona fide social relationship is, but right now I just don't know if we defined it at all. I think we just opened it up. So I'd vote for the amendment and against the bill. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, I'm glad for the opportunity to discuss this. I'm not sure exactly where I am on the bill. I just have a basic question. In the past, some of the confusion out throughout the state has been with regard to the involvement of a certain establishment, usually those who sell alcohol or some food and things like that, and you can go in and play poker. And as long as that individual establishment was never really involved, you know, in promoting or advertising, unless it was for a charitable purpose, and there's a whole other sequence of events you have to go through. But just an ordinary poker game, as long as they didn't sponsor it, advertise it, and they incidentally maybe sold drinks or something, then it was kind of an okay deal. My question would be, when we define bona fide social relationship based on any common interest, I would like to know if we think that opens up the door to establishments basically becoming more involved in sponsoring or promoting these activities and then being protected under our new definition of bona fide social relationship, thereby not having to go through the charitable mechanism that we have in the statute now to be involved. That's just a question I have. I'm not necessarily against or for the bill, but I do have a concern with the the broadness of the definition.
Chairman Childers, for your first time.
Mr. Chairman, if you go to the statute, 6-7-101A, subsection E, any game, wager, or transaction which is incidental to a bona fide social relationship is participated in by natural persons only, and in which no person is participating directly or indirectly in professional gambling. That's the statute that we're concerned about. The word professional gambling is where this all started, in which the Attorney General, because of the indirect profit issue, he was concerned that the professional gambling, they, because they're making an indirect profit, any place that was serving drinks, hors d'oeuvres, or anything like that, they were, in fact, professional gamblers. We changed that statute. Now then, there are some attorneys that are questioning the word bona fide social relationship, and I understand what the good speaker's talking about in that definition, but in my opinion, and I agree, I'm not an attorney, this incidental to a relationship and is participated in by natural persons only addresses those issues. And I would hope that people understand that going all the way back to the trapper days, at least for the white people, that was the first time that gambling in that manner was introduced. If you go to the tribal people, the good representative from the reservation would agree that was going on long before the trappers were there. And the issue, game, wager, or transaction, it's just a simple, I think the statutes are very clear. I'm sorry, it just, this bona fide social relationship, we're trying to define it to try to simplify things. We've been doing it since the professional gambling. And I think the statutes now address that there's no problem. Sorry about that.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I guess we should pass statutes that everybody can read and understand. I'm not quite sure we're doing that. We make gambling a crime in 67102. It says a person who engages in gambling commits a misdemeanor. And then B, it says a person who engages in professional gambling commits a felony punishable by imprisonment. Well, so then we define gambling as means risking any property for gain contingent in whole or in part upon lot, chance, operation of a gambling device, or other happening or outcome of an event, including a sporting event, over which the person taking a risk has no control. And then it says, but does not include any game wager transaction which is incidental to a bona fide social relationship, is participated in by natural persons only, and in which no person is participating directly or indirectly in professional gambling. So what this definition does is it defines a bona fide social relationship as any common interest, including a common interest in participation in the game wager transaction in which the parties are engaged. Now, I challenge you to think of a situation in which people get together to gamble that doesn't fit that exception. Well, so then we redefined professional gambling last time. And what it's professional gambling essentially says is you can't derive a profit therefrom. And profit means a benefit other than a gain, which is realized or unrealized and direct, including benefits from unequal advantage in a series of transactions. So that's the house odds. But does not include the benefits of proprietorship or management of a business wherein a game wager or transaction described in the statute occurs. So you can sell food or drink, but you can't take a house cut from the game. So I think what this bill tries to do is to say if anybody gets together and plays cards, as long as somebody doesn't take a cut of that, then that's legal. But if somebody does take a cut of that, it's not illegal. But it sure takes a lot of steps to get there. And because of that, I'm fairly concerned about the broad language of the bill and urge your consideration of that when you vote.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I was going through the definitions and bona fide social relationship is also used in Section E. It's used several places, so it's defined there. The good bringer of the amendment talked about the chairman on the other side was looking to find a way to amend it, and I'd also I'd stand against the amendment and say, well, let's send it across and see what give him the tool here that he can use to see if he can work that over and make it a little bit clearer that the concern is that. But bona fide social relationship is used in the definitions in Section 101 in several places. And the word bona fide is the term that's used. Bona fide social event, bona fide this, bona fide. So a bona fide relationship to me is something that I consider would like to do. I get with my friends and say that I'd like to have a game of poker. The definition was just given to us by the good majority floor leader says to me that as long as somebody that's not participating is not receiving some kind of a profit from this or taking some money from it, then it's legal. So on and against the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Okay, we'll move on to second time. Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, without a doubt, this issue has gone on for probably 6 years, and every time a different attorney, and I'm not by any means trying to degrade the profession, but there's been interpretations all over the place, and I think at some time we need to have some common sense in this. And I'm sorry, this has been in place for years, and I think if you research the legal records before the issue started coming up on professional gambling, it's never been questioned. And it's been straightforward as far as whether you have a game, a wager. And guaranteed there's lots of them going on, or transaction. I mean, in business, I'll bet you I can finish this before so-and-so. I'm sorry. I think that we've done what we can with it. Let it alone. On and against the amendment and for the bill.
Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Representative Yagi.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. When we started out in the interim, the bona fide social relationship had the meaning to us that it was going to be some friends getting together, some acquaintances that knew one another. We just wanted to get together and just have a good time. And I think the testimony we've heard has said what a bona fide social relationship is. I don't think anybody knows what it is. And if it's so clear, and I would suggest we don't need this bill expanding, saying a relationship is based on any common interest. That just worries me. So I think we need to defeat this bill and see if we can come back and get in the interim, a bona fide social relationship with the intent that we really meant. It was some friends that got together having a harmless game. And I think this just opens it up to bigger than that. So there's my speech. Thank you.
Representative Yagi, did you want to withdraw your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, I will withdraw the amendment at this time. Thank you.
Without objection, the amendment is withdrawn. House Bill 188, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo. Berger,
aye.
Blake,
no.
Flickery,
no.
Bonner,
aye.
Botten,
no.
Brechtel,
no.
Brown,
aye.
Burkhart,
no.
Bird,
no.
Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy,
aye.
Childers,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Kraft,
no.
Davison,
no.
Edmonds,
no.
Eklund,
no.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman, Gay, Gingery,
no.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
no.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
no.
Hunt,
no.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
no.
Kasparic,
no.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
no.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
no.
Lubno,
no.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
no.
McComey,
aye.
Miller,
no.
Moniz, Nicholas,
no.
Patton,
no.
Peasley,
no.
Pedersen,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Petroff,
aye.
Korberg,
no.
Roscoe,
no.
Simlick,
no.
Shepperson,
aye.
Steward,
aye.
Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
no.
Throne,
aye.
Vronish,
no.
Wallace,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Bonner, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 22 ayes, 38 noes.
House Bill 188, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 188 has failed to pass the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 210.
House Bill 210, introduced by Representative Green, an act relating to civil procedure regarding landlord tenant return of deposits, this being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 210 and will withdraw at the appropriate time. Ladies and gentlemen, I just kind of wanted to bring this to everyone's attention again. It's a policy decision. I'm not a landlord, never have been, don't ever want to be. But it just seems to me that this is just something that we as a legislature should not get involved in. Why are we setting the recovery standards? Every situation is different. You might want the recovery standards at triple or quadruple, but that's something that should be negotiated between the two parties involved. That should be a contractual thing. It shouldn't be set in statutes by us. So I'm just asking that you give this another thought. It's a policy decision, and I appreciate the discussion.
Representative Green, for your first time.
Brothers and sisters of the 61st, and to our distinguished colleague from House District 58, I appreciate her concern. I think if we did something like three or four times the amount, It would become a induced frivolous lawsuits among the people. All we're trying to do here is make the imbalance between the strength of the landlord and the strength of the tenant more equal. This will give equal footing to the tenant to have the chance to go for double the deposit without inducing frivolous lawsuits.
Representative Peterson, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I rise in support of the amendment against the bill. Ladies and gentlemen, in my life, I've had numerous tenant relationships on both sides of this. One, I've been a landlord and as well as a tenant, perhaps a tenant more than a landlord. And the scenario that takes place is you sign a rental agreement, you have a look at the premises with the landlord, you see the condition it's in, and then you go forward. There are normal wear and tear conditions that take place in any living relationships. You think of your own home, you will have that happen. And sometimes you'll have tenants that may trash an apartment. That can happen, or a house, whatever the structure may be. And then there has to be appropriate action. If you look at the bill is an equity bill. At this point in time, without this new language, it says, tenant, you can go to court. Landlord, you can go to court, and you prove your matters. Now, I have seen tenants that have videoed their units before they moved into them. I've seen them video them after they move out, and the parties sat down, they resolve this. In the agreement that's signed, that you initially go into this with, whether you're the tenant or the landlord, if you want to double or add punitive measures to that thing because one party doesn't comply with what you agree on, you can put that in. You don't need Wyoming statutory authority here to invade the contractual relationship that exists between the landlord and a tenant. You look at this bill, there's plenty of adequate provisions here. This situation here negates the inspection. It negates the various relationships you go into these agreements with. And I think the body ought to look at this carefully, because when you start doubling the amounts and tripling and all this kind of stuff, that puts affirmative burdens on parties that invades the contractual relationship that exists and certainly upsets the balance that can exist between landlord and tenants.
Representative Stubson, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I just disagree a little bit with the last speaker. This has nothing to do with the contract. This has nothing to do with the contractual provisions that you have built in and the protections that you've built into the contract. This has, and in the statement that this is something that the legislature shouldn't be involved in, it misses the point that we are already involved in it. And that's because of the rest of what's contained in 121-1208, which spells out, and all we say is, listen, landlord, when you get these deposits, you have to, within a certain time frame, report back to the tenant on how much of the deposit you're keeping and how much you're giving back and what you did with the deposit you kept. That's it. It doesn't have anything to do with disputes over damages. It doesn't have to do anything to do with these other types of disputes. It's just whether you met that requirement, whether you met that reporting or not. And you know how it is. I mean, it's a situation of where when you have the money, you have the power. If you've got the deposit, if you've got that $2,000 in the bank, you're the one that has the authority. And so all this says is, if you don't meet that obligation that we said you have to meet in statute, this obligation that we've told tenants they have to meet, and you refuse to give that accounting and you refuse to give back a deposit that you, under your own accounting, say the tenant is entitled to, then you're going to owe twice that. And it builds an incentive into the statute to actually obey what we said they have to do in the first place. So I guess it's not as simple as just saying this is interfering with contracts. What it is implementing what we've already decided landlords need to do.
Mr. Speaker, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I agree with a lot of what the good representative from House District 56 just said. However, I'm on and against the bill. And the reason why is if you look at 121-1208 under subsection A, there are specific protections in there for both landlords and renters already. And if you look at subsection A, you'll find that the balance of any deposit or prepaid rent with a written itemization must be delivered or mailed back to the renter within 30 days after the termination of the rental agreement. And there's some other timelines in there as well. And subsection B also talks about utilities deposits. And basically what it says there is if utilities are owed, then a landlord has to go ahead and use that to pay the utilities, and then he has to deliver, if there's any refund due to the renter, shall be paid within 7 days after the utility deposit has been applied to the renter's utilities debt, or within 15 days after receipt of the renter's new mailing address, whichever is later. So in A and B, you have some very strict timelines for landlords to give back either a deposit or a utility deposit to the renter. But here's my last point is the one that really is what convinced me that I'm a no vote on this piece of legislation, and that is we have those requirements for both sides in A and B. Then if you look at C, the statute calls for either party to pay the other side's costs if the other party doesn't do what they're supposed to do in A and B. So in my mind, if you read subsection C, it says if an owner, i.e. a landlord, unreasonably fails to comply with A or B, the renter may recover the full deposit and court costs. So if you have to take a landlord in to get that deposit, you get your costs back. There's number one. In an action by a renter pursuant to this section, if the owner is the prevailing party, in other words, if the landlord was right and the renter was wrong, and the court finds that the renter acted unreasonably in bringing the action, the landlord may be awarded court costs in addition to any other relief available. So basically, each side has to pay the other side's costs if they're doing something wrong under A and B. And I think when you add in there an arbitrary double the amount of the deposit as a penalty, you're kind of giving one party one leg up over the other. And so for those reasons, I'm against the bill.
Anyone else for their first time? First time, we'll move on to second time. Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I guess on that last point, the thing to remember is that court costs are only your costs of filing and your costs of service. They have nothing to do with what you're paying an attorney. They have nothing to do with your travel costs to get back to the town to collect this deposit that under our statutes your tenant has unlawfully retained. What it is it's essentially, I think, $35 filing fee and another $25 to $30 in service fees. So in order to get back your $2,000, they're going to give you what you're lawfully entitled to back plus an additional $70. And does that make sense? Does that give an incentive for tenants to go after the deposits they're entitled to? And does it give an incentive for landlords to actually do what they're legally obligated to do in the first place, which is return your deposit? And I would submit it doesn't. What the double penalty does do that. It does actually give an incentive for both parties to act according to what we've spelled out in law.
Second time. Anyone else? Prior to the sponsor. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The response, one other thing, is the tenant has to come back to the location where that rental unit was. So those 30 days, typically a lot of people move away, where they move to another part of the state, they move out of the state, they move out of the country. The only way to recover is by coming back to that location for that small amount of money from that deposit. So we're trying to give some reason for that person to come back, and really the reason is for that landlord to be honest and give that money back rightfully, which is already in statute. Thank you.
Anyone else for the second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the discussion, for the good representative from House District 45. We're just trying to keep everyone on equal footing here. This is being entered into by two willing participants. So we just got to keep everyone on equal footing. I heard mention about an incentive to follow the law. There's no incentive to follow the law to not murder somebody. So why do I need an incentive to follow the law on a rental agreement? You just do what's right. There shouldn't be an incentive for anybody. It needs to be on equal footing. And I appreciate your support and urge you to vote no on the bill.
Representative Shepperson, can you withdraw your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I withdraw third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 210.
Without objection, the amendment has been withdrawn. House Bill 210, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Flickery,
Bonner, Botten, Brechtel, Brown, Burkhart, Bird, Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
No.
Davison.
No.
Edmonds.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
No.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
No.
Greer.
No.
Green.
Aye.
Harshman. Harvey. Hunt. Illaway. Yagi. Kasparic. Croker. Crone. Lockhart. Laux. Lubno. Madden. McKim. McComey. Miller. Moniz. Nicholas. Patton. Peasley. Pedersen. Peterson.
No.
Petroff.
No.
Petroff. Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
No.
Semlick.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Steward.
No.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
No.
Throne.
Aye.
Vronish.
No.
Wallace.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 26 aye, 34 no.
House Bill 210, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 210 has failed to pass the House. We are now at that order of business of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Because the good representative from Fremont County is going to be gone this afternoon and tomorrow, would you please move House Bill 224 to the top of your list. That's House Bill 224 to the top of your list. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, I move that the House resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? We are now in the committee of the whole. Representative Yagi.
Good morning, brothers and sisters of the 61st. Before I start, I got to have privilege of the floor, and since I'm up here, I'm just going to take it. How's that? I'd really like you to look, turn around, look behind you. My favorite lady, my wife. Wow, that was tough. Jane, my daughter Crystal, my grandson Trey, and my son-in-law Ben. Up from the oasis of the southwest corner, I'd like you to welcome them. Thanks for coming up. And I just want to tell you one of the exciting things on this day in 1913, the U.S. Constitution ratified the 16th Amendment, which gave us the ability to collect income tax. How's that? Boy, we're on a roll today. Code of the West. Okay, the body will come to order, and the first bill for our consideration is, get the right one here, is House Bill number 224. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 224, introduced by Representative Miller, an act relating to property platted plots requirement. This bill was referred to committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Shepperson, Stubson. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, you do so with the recommendation that House Bill 224 do pass. There are no amendments, and the good gentleman from House District 55 will explain the bill.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What House Bill 224 is a bill that just brings some statutes into compliance with each other. It refers to some actions we took in this body a couple of years ago where we amended the definition of sale, both S-A-L-E and S-E-L-L, in the county subdivision statutes. The change was made to specifically allow property owners to offer for sale lots in potential subdivisions prior to the final approval of the plat. Now, that was in the county, outside the city limits. What this bill does, it just brings it within the city limits to where a developer within the city limits can do exactly the same thing. So a property owner can advertise and offer for sale a lot in a potential subdivision prior to the final plot being approved and recorded, but they're still subject to the same restrictions as noted in the county subdivision statutes. And what this does, it gives the potential developer an idea of whether there's a market out there to go through the expensive process of making these subdivisions. So what this bill does, it allows the developer in the city to do the same thing that we allow the developer in the subdivisions outside the city limits to do. And with that, I'll stand for any questions. If there's no questions, I call for the question.
I see nobody there, so question being called for. All those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 224 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? I think that one passed. House Bill 224 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 39. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 39, introduced by the Labor Committee, an act relating to the Health Litigation Fund. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass. Gay, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller, Peasley, no. Barbudo, Kraft, Gingrey, signed, Representative Miller, Vice Chair. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Co-Chair Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 39 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment. It will be moved at the appropriate time, and I'm going to turn explanation of the bill over to a Chair Harvey.
Yeah. Post number one. Yeah, number one.
Representative Harshman.
Mr. Chairman, at this time I'd like to move standing committee amendment number one to House Bill 39. Ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, as you can see on the standing committee amendment, the initial appropriation was $2 million. It's just a slight haircut down to the $500,000, which we thought was appropriate. So I'd ask for your approval and stand for any questions or call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of the standing committee amendment number one on House Bill 39, would you please say aye? Those opposed? The motion has passed. We're back on the bill. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is one in the series of how to work with the ACA. We're going to fight it. This is one of the bills that the governor's asked us to carry for him, and it actually, I think, is an excellent policy. It creates a fund to help develop expertise in the AG's office. And what this money will be used for, and if I could just give you an example. We had a tragic thing happen in our community, and I called one of my colleagues that sits here on this floor, and I asked him, I said, I think these folks need some legal advice, but I don't know what legal advice they need. And he says, hey, that's not my area of expertise, but let me get you my partner. So he ran down the hall, got his partner, and we went on a conference call, and it enabled me to help my constituent get the kind of help that they needed at a very early stage in the tragedy that happened. And what this clarified was that the colleague that I called is a very good attorney, but he wasn't an expertise in that area of law. So what this bill does is, with the appropriation, is it allows the AG's office to develop the expertise necessary. It will be, this account will be administered by the Attorney General's office, and what will enable them to do is to hire experts, to hire outside help, to train some attorneys to develop the expertise within the Attorney General's office. They do have attorneys, and they have good attorneys. But even when they started with the water litigation, they did hire outside experts, and what this enabled them to do was to develop the expertise within their office to continue on with, I can think of three specific lawsuits that they helped to develop this. If you go on page 2, starting with line 8, the litigation that may be funded pursuant to this section shall be related to health care reform. And actually, even going up one on little b, related to litigation concerning health care reform. And so it's the expenses, including and not limiting to the defense of the state of Wyoming or its political subdivisions, and that, folks, is hospital districts. The political subdivisions could be come in many forms, but what this does is that it helps them with litigation for the whole act, which we did join with another state in this, but it also helps in litigation of the regulatory orders. And I think, folks, that is the most scary part of the ACA, is that the regulations, the hundreds of thousands of pages of regulations that the state of Wyoming may be compelled to live with if we don't fight them. And I think that this is probably the biggest area that we need the help with, and we need to develop the expertise to be able to do that. And then you can go on through, there's the rest of page 2 and all of page 3. It outlines different components of the ability for the Attorney General to fight different areas. We started out with $2 million, which we thought was appropriate. It did get a haircut down to $500,000. If anybody wants to bring an amendment to raise that up a little bit, depending on how strong you want to fight against the ACA, you know, that's certainly your prerogative. But at this point, I will stand for questions and ask for your favorable vote on this bill.
See no one ready to say anything else, so we'll call for the question. Question being called, all those in favor of Co-Chair Miller's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 39 do pass. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
House Bill 39 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 179. The reading clerk will read the bill.
I believe it's 197.
197. Oh, excuse me, 197.
House Bill 197, introduced by Representative Burkhart, an act relating to cities and towns regarding nuisance abatement. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Patton, Roscoe, Stubson. No, Blickery, Croker, Shepperson. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 197 do pass. There are no amendments, and the good gentleman from House District 15 will explain the bill.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Currently, when the municipalities abate a nuisance building, they're unable to recoup their costs. The main reason for that is that statute doesn't allow a special assessment as it does in other areas. Those special assessments could be levied against the buildings that are torn down or abated so that the cities and towns can recoup their costs. The abatements of those buildings, and these are generally derelict buildings, pigeon roosts, unsafe buildings, and that sort of thing, exist in all of our towns. Also included in there are those contaminated with drug laboratories and those sorts of things. Currently, all the cities can do is assess a junior lien against the property. Those junior liens often don't even come up and don't get paid. And what happens is after the buildings are removed or repaired, the owner or the mortgager of the building gets a benefit that their building becomes worth more money. In some cases, demolishing the building makes the lot worth more money than it would if the building remained there. And you have to consider some of these buildings may have chemicals in them from, say, a methamphetamine laboratory or asbestos, and may be unsaleable until the building is removed and then the lot becomes worth a lot of money. In order to allow the cities, the towns, to assess that special assessment on the property, statute has to be changed. The county clerks and assessors generally will not file those special assessments because it's not provided for in statute. While the municipalities can remove the buildings, they can't file an assessment. It's currently not in statute, not allowed. This bill changes that to allow them to file those special assessments in order to have a priority in recouping the taxpayers' money to demolish these buildings. And that's the general gist of the bill. I'll stand for questions.
Seeing none, oh, we do have Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was a no vote in committee on this, and my concerns were, I understand when we're talking about the extreme cases, the meth houses and things like that, but I guess it doesn't take much for any property to be declared a nuisance, and then if you do that, the cities, towns, governments have the right to put their lien in front of a bank or anyone else. And anyone else in private industry, their lien comes first. They get their money first. And I guess I'm just not sure that that is right. I almost think that if they have a problem, they need to get in line with everyone else. And so I guess that was my no vote and a concern of mine, and maybe we can have some discussion on that here today. Thank you.
Representative Blickery.
Mr. Chairman, fellow representatives, what this bill does is interferes with contracts, with contract right. And what it does is essentially make it so that this would go in front of the lien that the bank has or the mortgage holder has. And if this is passed, it's going to make it that much harder for people to get a loan to buy a home. It's going to interfere with everything that we know as we go forward today, or as we've been doing through contract law. This actually just sticks it so that any city or governing body can stick a lien in front of normal contract law. So think about that when you vote, please, on and against the bill.
Representative Branish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I spent 16 years on the city council, and we always had these kind of problem properties come up. And I can feel for the cities, and because it's always been a problem. But what we're doing here is we're setting up the mechanism where the government can now steal your property. And I am so opposed to that. I think it's so wrong, and I think it's the wrong solution to the problem, so I stand against the bill. Thank you.
Representative Louts.
Mr. Speaker, rising on and against the bill, I agree with both the previous speakers. In a city in the center of the state, they seem to be real involved with a lot of this, and the property rights and the rights of the individual property owners need to be first in line, not behind the government entity. Please vote no for this.
Representative Burkhart.
To answer some of those questions, sorry, Mr. Chairman, there is a process to put these nuisance abatements on the buildings. Generally, it takes quite some time to do this. Notices are sent to the property owner, the mortgagor, and those people asking them to take care of their property. These are not ordinary houses that are foreclosed on. These are nuisances. These are public health and safety issues that need to be addressed. There was one mentioned here in this city as we went into session this year that they weren't sure how they would handle the approximately $4,500 needed to clean up a house that was used for the production of illegal drugs. These liens, there is a process. Most of the communities use a uniform code in assessing these properties for demolition or cleanup, and then to also assess these abatements or abatement assessments to take care of the property. It's not they walk in and take someone's property. They generally have plenty of time to clean up the problems, which they don't do. If you let the taxpayers clean up your problem for you and then you sell the property, you may make a nice profit off the taxpayers, and the taxpayers recoup none of their money. This is no different than a special assessment for a park, a special assessment for other things that seem to come up occasionally, and there is a process to handle this. These are health and safety issues in the cities, and I don't think any of us want some of these run-down derelict buildings in our towns, and the owners don't clean them up even when notified by the cities.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to the bank liens or another lien on the property, let's talk about that a second. The analogy I would draw is the bankruptcy law. And I'm being a banker myself, I hear bankers squeal all the time and say, you know, this just isn't fair. I had this loan and I had everything lined out and the guy took bankruptcy on me and upset my apple cart as far as collecting my loan's concerned. Well, what I tell bankers is you have to monitor, and they do. You all know if you have money borrowed from a bank, you have to periodically submit financial statements. They reassess your position, They have all kinds of safety valves in their security instruments that say anytime we reasonably deem ourselves insecure, we can call the note. We can call the loan. And so there's no excuse for a banker to say, well, the bankruptcy laws have cheated me out of my money, because the answer is they monitor that loan, and as the borrower's financial condition deteriorates and they see that it's deteriorating, they know where the line is where that borrower is going to qualify for bankruptcy, and if they don't want him to go into bankruptcy, then they need to call the loan before that happens. That's the same thing on these abandoned buildings. The bank's got the bank has the money loaned. They're getting periodic financial statements from the borrower. If they're doing their job, they're also doing periodic inspections of the property. And through the inspections of the property and the financial information that they're getting from the borrower, they know exactly what the situation is. Now, if they allow it to deteriorate to the point
where it qualifies as a derelict or a dangerous or unsafe building, then that's the banker's fault. Frankly, I don't have a lot of sympathy for them. They should have called the loan a long time ago and rearranged their matters with the borrower and not just ridden the boat clear down to the bottom of the ocean. And these are terrible problems when there's a little town down on a little river down in the kind of the south of where the big rare and uncommon contest was here long ago, that had a whole town full of abandoned and derelict buildings. And I mean seriously, about two-thirds of the town was abandoned and derelict properties, and they had no ability to do anything with those buildings because they couldn't afford it. The town couldn't afford it. And so these are terrible problems, and if they're allowed to deteriorate to that point, however it may go, then it's fair game at that point. And at some point, the public has an interest in getting it cleaned up. And some of these demolition jobs and these cleanup jobs, like one in my community that occurred, became a Superfund site, for Pete's sake. It had so much pigeon droppings in it that it became a Superfund site. And it was incredibly expensive to clean it up. And to say that a banker, well, to say that a property owner and his financier, whoever it may be, can just continue to let a property deteriorate like that and create a public health hazard and then say, well, all our money has to be paid back first before you get anything for paying back for cleaning up my building, which I allowed to go to the point that it became a public health hazard, I just think isn't right. So this is not going to happen until the building deteriorates to that point. There's all kinds of opportunity for the owner and his financier, whoever it may be, to know that that's coming. And if they allow it to happen and allow it to deteriorate to that point, and if they become a public health hazard, and that's what they are, they're unsafe or they're in some other manner endanger public health, then at some point the public's got to have the ability to step in there. And when they do, and if it's a Superfund site, for Pete's sake, then the public ought to have a right to collect the cost to the extent that the property is worth it, collect the cost of what it costs to clean it up. So I would urge you to vote in favor of this bill.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I listened to the previous speaker about the process, the due process that banks go through on protecting their investments in homes, I'm with him. I think that's part of their business plan, and that's how they handle it. But what if it's an absentee personal owner, maybe a family member, who's got a home like this that doesn't have that same sort of review? Does the city get between them and this value that they think they have on the property? The bankers know how to handle this. That's their job. But I was thinking about the individuals that would be maybe caught on this prioritization of whatever methods were used by the municipality or whomever to clean it up and or remove it.
Representative Shepherdson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the discussion. I appreciate the good gentleman from House District 14. I love his diversion tactics, talking about bankruptcy and all this good stuff. It has nothing to do with the price of tea in China. Every city has nuisance laws. Everyone's different. I talked to a couple of the communities where I live close to, the Twin Cities in the middle of a big oil field, and we have this issue. And if there's anyone who should be sympathetic to it, it should be me. I mean, if you would see those cities, it's just devastating. The problem is you can have cities declare a property a nuisance, and they aren't abandoned. They aren't super deteriorated. It could be because of the weed problem in their yard. They want them to clean up the weeds. So there are the extreme cases, like the big theater in the city across the mountain or those meth houses. But a lot of times it's just a private borrower or a lender, or it could be a bank, and a person that just can't afford to do everything that the city would like them to do with a house. That's my concern. The good speaker from House District 15 mentioned that they give notices to the lenders and so forth. I was a lender for 9 years. I don't care. If my borrower is making the payments regularly and doing a good job performing their note, and you are just a regular mortgagee, you do not review financials. If you're getting your payments, you just, the loan is performing, you're doing good, and you don't do an inspection on that property. The only time we did inspections is if it was a loan over $1 million. Well, I don't know too many of the normal Joes that have loans over $1 million on their houses. So, again, there is the extreme cases that I sympathize for on this loan, but there's too many other abuses that are potential here. So just keep that in mind. Thank you. On and against the bill.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple pieces of information on that. Under the abatement process, the owner of the property and the lien holder are notified of the that the property is about to be assessed for nuisance abatement and are given the opportunity to either clean, repair, fix their property, remove the hazards, the nuisances, and that. The bill also requires, the way special assessments are levied under the statutes, that the lien holders further notified and the owners further notified. This isn't just some haphazard thing that occurs where they walk in overnight and say, clean your property or we tear it down tomorrow. There is a process that takes place. I think all of us have heard about the asbestos processes, and most people, if they have asbestos in an abandoned building, can't afford to take the building down or remove the asbestos. That usually exceeds the cost of the property. In the long run, what happens is we, the taxpayers, pay for these, or they just sit in a town and exist forever. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Just very quickly, Mr. Chairman. They can't just do it because you have leaves in your yard. It makes reference in here to, it's in 15.1.103, which is the general powers for cities and towns, and it makes references in here. It's got to be under either paragraph XIX, which would be 19 of that subsection A, or XXVI, which would be 26. Now, 19 says declare and abate nuisances. And impose fines upon parties who create, continue, or permit nuisances to exist. And that's magic language. I think nuisances, I didn't have time to look, but I think nuisances is a defined term, and even if it's not, you can't just be arbitrary. You can't say failure to rake the leaves in somebody's yard is a nuisance. Now, if the grass goes up high enough, it's a fire hazard, and you're in an area where they're trying to control for fire, that might be another matter. And the other one is XXVI, which would be 26, provide for the repair, removal, or destruction of any dangerous building or enclosures. Well, I can tell you, look at the one that went on in my community, and you can go to court and argue almost till the cows come home over whether something's dangerous or not, and you're not going to get a favorable ruling from the court unless it's really dangerous. So it's either got to be a nuisance or it's got to be dangerous. Then this comes into play. It can't be just because the city council arbitrarily decides they don't like somebody.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What one man's castle is another man's junkyard, and these do become arbitrary when we've got our councils and our mayors come flying through. My concern with this bill, when I look at it, is we come into the fact that we now give these governmental organizations, our city councils, a large hammer to swing around when they determine that something is a nuisance. And they are broadly defined in some of our city ordinances. And we incentivize them to swing that hammer by saying, you know what, we can go and push this particular landowner or absentee landowner to do these things. Otherwise, we'll step in and take control of that property, and then we're going to get compensated for it. That's what kind of gnaws at me on this bill. So I just can't support it. Thanks.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just 2 points. The communities can already abate the nuisances. They can already go in and clean up the derelict buildings, force people to clean up their properties. That's already in statute. They can already do that. All this bill does is gives them the opportunity to recoup the taxpayers' money. And that's it. It doesn't change the law that already exists on removing those nuisances, only that the community can recoup at least some of its money in doing that. With that, I would call for the question.
Question being called. Those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion, would the committee of the whole rise to report, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 197 do pass. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Shoot, the chair's in doubt. Would the ayes please stand? Those opposed? Now we read this funny little thing. Pursuant to House Bill, or House Resolution 10-5B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. Those in favor, please stand. Oh, excuse me. Let's go to the next one. Pursuant to House Bill, or House Resolution 10-5B, House Bill 197, having... No, we want a roll call, don't we? Okay, we want a roll call.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
No.
Flickery.
No.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell. Kennedy, Childers,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Kraft, Davison,
no.
Edmonds,
no.
Eklund, Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
no.
Gingery,
no.
Goggles,
no.
Greer,
no.
Green,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
no.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
no.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
No.
Lubno.
No.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller. Miller.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
No.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Petroff. Korberg,
no.
Roscoe,
aye.
Semlick,
no.
Shepperson,
no.
Stewart,
no.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
no.
Throne,
aye.
Vronish,
no.
Wallace,
no.
Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Lockhart, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Freeman, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 25 ayes, 35 noes.
Pursuant to House Resolution 10-5B, House Bill 197, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 209. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 209, introduced by Representative Green, an act relating to public health and safety regarding emergency medical review organizations. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Flickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Shepperson. No, Stubson. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Illoway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that House Bill 209 do pass, and the gentleman from House District 45 will explain the bill.
Representative Green.
Brothers and sisters, 61st, what we're trying to do here is put EMTs on par with the other medical providers who already have immunity, as you see listed in the bill. Currently, the different medical professions that have immunity are the dental, optometric, nursing, osteopathic, pharmacy, already have immunity for this process. So what we're trying to do here is to establish a professional review organization. So a review organization, whether it be at the local, the county, or the state level, can go to another local, county, or state level on EMTs and do spot checks and look on each other with mutual consent, and the EMTs can speak freely and not be held liable for anything they say, so somebody can come back afterwards and sue them. This works for looking at their standing operating procedures, and it also addresses whether they respond to an emergency and how they treated a patient. The EMTs only have split seconds when they respond to a scene, and their actions are more immediate than people who are working in the hospital have the ability to sit back and take time working with their patients. So it's more imperative for the EMTs to have immunity. I'd like to give two examples of where this has actually been applicable in my life, working with EMTs in Afghanistan. One was the unit we were replacing had a set of jaws of life. The jaws of life is what EMTs use to get into a vehicle. We had an American vehicle, up-armored type, that unfortunately was destroyed by an improvised explosive device. A couple soldiers were stuck inside the vehicle. Our personnel from Wyoming responded to the scene. They used a battery-operated set of jaws of life. Unfortunately, that set of jaws of life could not go through the extra reinforced steel that vehicle, the MRAP, housed. So therefore, they had to fly in another unit to bring us another set of jaws of life, a more powerful set of jaws of life. Fortunately, the unit was able to tell us, hey, we had a critical failure on the battlefield. When you come to replace us, you need to bring a better set of jaws of life. With this immunity, the immunity that those soldiers had would be extended to the EMTs in Wyoming. So they wouldn't fear for their jobs, fear for a lawsuit, that they would be able to voice their concerns. Hey, we failed on something. This is a learning experience we had. Another thing was on another mission, one of our EMTs, it was his first time ever dealing with a live patient as a citizen National Guard. He's not an EMT by trade. So his patient, unfortunately, died while he was treating him. So then we had to figure out what mental health providers do we have on our base, or what are our procedures for somebody to respond to going through such a traumatic event in one's life. So then we found out we had a chaplain on the base. We had a psychiatrist on our base. At the alternate base, we had a social worker. So we called the other three medevac units in the eastern part of the country and said, hey, so when you have a medic go through such a stressful situation, these are the procedures you may want to have in place that we didn't think about ahead of time. This is a protocol that you want to make sure you have. So therefore, we were able to fix our standing operating procedures to have that immunity. We weren't afraid of the other units to come back and say, hey, we made a huge mistake in this guy or whatever else, solely because we had the immunity that's authorized by being in the military. So we're trying to extend these immunities that are already authorized in the state of Wyoming to the dental, optometric, nursing, osteopathic, pharmacy organizations. So again, I just want to go, this is all about patient care and patient outcomes. The EMTs, they can go look at one location to look at another to see what equipment they have, how they conduct their operations. They can take that back and cross-pollinate that institutional knowledge from one location to another location. And then also, how do they respond to specific situations?
Mr. Chairman?
Chairman Illoway.
I heard there is a standing committee, or there is a committee of the whole amendment. And I guess that could be moved anytime. I thought it was a standing committee amendment. My mistake. But anyhow, it's the citations on page 3. They were in error on the printed copy, and the citations on the committee of the whole amendment are correct.
Okay. We need the person who brought the amendment to move the amendment. So, Representative Green?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the amendment. If no questions, I'd like to call the question.
Okay, we're on committee of the whole amendment number 1 to House Bill 209. All those in favor of the committee of the whole amendment number 1, would you please say aye?
Aye.
Those opposed? We're back on the bill. And question being called? Oh, excuse me. They're hiding behind this bighorn sheep up here. Man, these are good-looking rams here. Speaker Pro Tem Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on this bill, because I assume this bill is not applicable to government. This is applicable to private organizations, because the government would already be covered. So these are county or town EMTs. They certainly are already covered by their own Governmental Claims Act. What it appears here, because the modifier is emergency medical is going in to modify the word society. So this would be an emergency medical society, which I take from reading the full context, it appears to be a private organization. I'm just curious if there is a private emergency medical society presently in the state of Wyoming. And then it sort of raises a different issue. So if these are private society going to do this, does that, if any of these folks actually work for a governmental entity, meaning a county, does that put the county now at a strange risk that they're going out on their private ability and looking at other EMT operations, especially if you have a county operation and they're going to another county to evaluate, but they're not going under their governmental claim, now you're going to have them going under this private society immunity. I'm just not sure if this, number one, if this is even needed, because I would assume most in this state are governmental, but if there are a few that are not governmental, I guess that would be my first question. And number two, it appears this would only really cover a private EMT group, not governmental. Just wanted to clarify that, if that was correct.
Majority Floor Leader Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer the good Speaker Pro Tem's questions, this is one of those nuanced areas of health care law. If you look at Wyoming Statute 3517-106, that's where the state of Wyoming adopted the immunity provisions granted by the Health Care Quality Improvement Act of 1986, which set up these professional standards review organizations. And this bill attempts to set up a professional standard review organization. What the purpose of these organizations are is to get together and avoid error creep. So if there's a mistake, the organizations can get together, identify the error, and stop the problem, and then do it confidentiality. The immunity provisions are peculiar to this set of statutes, and they're found in 3517-105, which says, all reports, findings, proceedings, and data of the professional standard review organization, and the society is a term of art there. It's just a group of EMTs getting together and doing run reviews. It's confidential and privileged and not subject to discovery or introduction into evidence in any civil action. And no person who is in attendance at a meeting of the organization shall be permitted or required to testify in any civil action as to evidence or other matters produced or presented during the hearing. Now, that rule says that you can't be called to testify about what happened, but what happened in the hearing is confidential. The reason that it's important to have this election in this particular statute is there's a mirror federal statute that provides the confidentiality and immunity under the Health Care Quality Improvement Act. If anybody cares, it's 42 USC, and then there's five number ones for the immunity section. And then it also says the original sources aren't produced. And then it also says that if you participate in good faith in 103, then you're not liable for the independently or jointly in your capacity as a member of the organization or society. So it doesn't exempt out liability for what happened during the run, but it does exempt out liability for the review and conducting a review in good faith. The object of the statute is to get better health care by stopping error creep. I don't know if society is the best word or if we need to do a second reading amendment to fix that. But this is something that governmental EMTs and non-governmental EMTs participate in as an organization for run review, and it's an opt-in to federal immunity and federal confidentiality for the run reviews. Otherwise, if you don't have the confidentiality and the immunity, they just don't do it.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, when we originally crafted the bill that the EMTs, the emergency medical group, was amended into, we fashioned it after FAA, a federal organization that investigates airplane crashes. And the reason that we fashioned it in this way is that when they investigated an airplane wreck, their job was not, their primary purpose was not to establish blame, but it was to prevent it from happening again. And that was the whole philosophy behind this bill in the first place, is that, you know, when medical mistakes happen, what are we going to do to make sure that they don't happen again? And so we created this immunity. We asked for reports to say, did this immunity help, and did you get systems changed? Yes, we did. We got systems changed. And what we did was we figured out, if you're going in for knee surgery, then before you're ever administered any kind of anesthetic, they go in and say, okay, confirm your name, confirm your birth date, and what are you in here for? Knee surgery? Okay, which knee? And then they take a permanent marker and they put an X on it. So simple of fixes. But we didn't want the review of the accident or the incident or whatever it is you want to call it. We didn't want that review to put people at risk, because the real issue behind this whole concept is, how do we stop bad outcomes? What can we do to change the outcomes? And one of the groups we left out were our first responders. So now the first responders, as they attempt to refine their processes, that they can go back to the shop and talk about, okay, what went right and what went wrong? And what can we do to change the process so that what went wrong doesn't happen again? That was the whole point behind this. And to answer my good friend from House District 23, yes, there are private entities that run ambulance services in Wyoming. And yes, they would be included in this, because yes, we want them to refine their processes so that they can do a better job every time they come to pick up you, me, or any of our family members, or any member or any citizen in the state of Wyoming. We want them to get it right, and we want them to get better at what they do. We want them to have the immunity so that it is not discoverable in court. So people can't say, I want to know what happened, and I know you guys talked about it. This is not about establishing blame. It's about fixing the process. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, Pro Tem Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly am not disputing the intent. I think we all agree with the intent is a good intent. I actually want to talk about the bill and actually how it's written, because I actually don't think it's written the way you think it is. I don't think it's accomplishing what you're wanting to actually accomplish. What this is dealing with is non-governmental
societies. And the comment was made that they were left out. They actually weren't left out. There's actually, you know, this gets done from government to government. You know, a county looks over another county, or a town looks over another town, and they go among each other. And they're covered certainly by the Governmental Claims Act, so they don't really need to worry. This is dealing more with as if you took emergency medical personnel and they formed like a fraternity, a society, the Emergency Medical Society of Wyoming. And then that society went and did these studies of different places, which is fine, but I think we need to clarify, maybe through a second reading amendment, and maybe that's all you're wanting, actually. If that's all you want, that's fine. But understand, that doesn't apply, because I think the comment was made that, you know, four guys are going to go over and check out these other four folks and do a run. That won't apply to those people. It only will apply to the official society that is formed. I mean, someone's going to have to actually set up the society and, I guess, form it as some type of corporation or something. Which is fine, I guess, but let's be clear as to what we're doing here. I mean, I think everybody agrees with the intent, so I think the bill should pass on, but I think there's some wordsmithing that needs to go on with this bill.
Question being called. Those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 209 do pass. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 209 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 161. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 161, introduced by Representative Illaway, an act relating to education, interstate compact on students of military families. The bill was sent to Committee for Education, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Madden, Teeters. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? And we're waiting for Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with a recommendation that House Bill 161 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I turn the management of the bill over to the sponsor.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the Interstate Compact on Educational Opportunity for Military Children. You do have a handout in your basket. It was just around about the time that you got the budget. Let me just tell you that a compact is an agreement between states. For some of you that don't know, so far 36 states have signed on to this compact. Let me just tell you briefly what it does, because the handout goes through and talks about what it does cover, what it does not cover. You will find that when military folks travel between bases and from the base here in the capital city, and they go down to the state south of us, or they go to other bases, you will find that military children sometimes are not able to move their classes. They may end up and take four courses of history because there's not a coordination between states and between the way superintendents of instruction allow it to occur. So what we've done, this is an interstate compact on educational opportunity, and it's designed to resolve transition issues only, and does not directly address the quality of education. So it is only the issues that can occur. The compact provisions specifically provide for flexibility and local discretion in course and program placement and on-time graduation within the criteria established by the state. The compact only applies to students transferring between member states And students in this case are defined as the children of active duty members of the uniformed services and some special classes of veterans for brief periods. The compact does not apply to inactive members of the Guard and Reserves or to most retired veterans or other DOD employees. It does cover educational records. Parents and guardians may receive copies of unofficial records from sending schools, and receiving schools must honor those records. Immunizations, the receiving school can obtain required immunizations, must provide within 30 days. The series of immunizations must be started within 30 days of enrollment. Some of these things you will say, well, that's common. It should occur. It does not occur always with military children just because of moving from state to state. Students can continue in the same grade in the receiving state regardless of entrance age requirements if he or she is already enrolled in kindergarten or first grade. A student may go to the next grade regardless of age requirements if he or she has completed kindergarten or first grade in the sending state. Students will be initially allowed to continue their enrollment at grade level in the receiving state, commensurate with their grade level from the sending state. The local education authority can waive course or program prerequisites where similar coursework has been completed in the sending school district. One of the people that I know well, his son took 4 courses of history because they moved 3 times. They took history in this state, in the state north of us, the state south of us, and the state to the northeast of us, all because there was no coordination regarding course work. Under extracurricular activities, school officials are not required to hold open or additional spaces, but they're encouraged to provide for transferring students to be included in extracurricular activities in the receiving school. Absences due to deployment. Students are allowed to request additional absences to visit their parent or guardian during deployment. There's special education services that are detailed in the bill. One of the problems is guardianship. If during deployment a child resides with caregivers that live outside of the student's current school district, the new school district may not charge tuition to the student, and they can continue to attend their current school. Powers of attorney are sufficient for enrollment. And under graduation, school districts are allowed but not mandated to waive courses required for graduation if similar coursework has been completed in another school district. If a student moves during his or her senior year and the receiving state cannot waive graduation requirements for similar coursework, then the receiving school district agrees to work with the sending school district to obtain a diploma so the student can graduate on time. Now, I can go through the entire bill if you would like, but that's a very brief idea of what's in this compact. As I said, compacts are really contracts between states, and 36 states have agreed to that. So I'll stand for questions if anybody has any, or will ask for the question.
I thought you did go through the bill, but was the majority floor leader, or you? Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Representative Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill number 161 do pass. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. The House Bill 161 has passed Committee of the Whole. Majority Floor Leader Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good job this morning. 5 bills addressed, an estimated 49 more to go. With that, I move that the Committee of the Whole begs leave to rise and sit again at 1:30 p.m.
You have heard the motion. Those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? We're gone anyway. Committee reports. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in room H18 to hear the following bills. House Bill 244, Employment Insurance Amendments. Senate File 24, Engrossed State Investments. And Senate Joint Resolution 6, Resolution Environmental Protection Agency Regulations.
Co-chair, subs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can I have privilege of the floor briefly?
Yes.
Thank you. Members of the 61st, to my left, I want to introduce you to Pete Obermueller, who is the legislative director for Congresswoman Lummis. And more importantly, he is a former resident of House District 56, one of our fine products from my home district.
Welcome, Chairman Simlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet at 12:15 today to continue hearing House Bill 171, House Bill 220, House Bill 171, corner crossings at intersecting public and private lands, House Bill 222, recreational consideration and public lands exchange, and House Bill 226, raw agricultural commodities inspection exemptions. And members of the committee, we can meet in the break room for substance before we go up at 12:15. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman Childers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet in room H11 at 7:30 Friday morning to consider the following bills. House Bill 221, Electrical Production Tax Distribution, and House Bill 259, Ethanol Producer Tax Credit.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, your Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet tomorrow morning, Friday, February the 4th at 6:59 a.m., to consider the following bills. Senate File 11, Chins, Administrative Change of Placement. Senate File 17, Probation and Parole Amendments. Senate File 35, Law Enforcement Academy Director Duties. Continuous work on House Bill 213, Medical Liability, Non-Economic Damages. And House Bill 257, Popular Vote Compact.
If I didn't call on Chairman Illoway, maybe we wouldn't have a meeting at noon, but I guess I got to. Chairman Illoway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet right now in House 18 to take up House Bill 231, Postdated Checks, House Bill 238, Tattoo Studios, Blood Donation Certification, Senate File 4, Elections, Military, and Overseas Voters, Senate File 23, Engrossed Mail Ballot Elections.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet today, 15 minutes after adjournment, in room H-17. We'll hear House Bill 207, Protection of Activities in Private Vehicles, House Bill 208, Off-Road Vehicle Registration Exemption, House Bill 246, National Guard Disposal of Land, House Bill 237, National Guard Educational Assistance, and House Bill 248, Unlawful Protesting at a Funeral Amendments.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 6, Travel, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:38 a.m. in room H-10. To consider the following bills. House Bill 258, Game and Fish Pioneer Licenses. House Senate File 28, State Parks Volunteers. Senate File 31, Off-Road Vehicle Definition. And Senate File 32, State Parks Trails.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Friday upon noon recess in room H-17 to hear one tiny little bill, House Bill 184, Minimum Wage Statutes Repeal.
Thank you. The body of the whole will recess and stand in recess till 1:30.